Hey everybody, this is Connor, your podcast producer. We're back with another Yellowbird Connect podcast. This week, Pat is in the studio talking to Lane Kawaoka of SimplePassiveCashflow.com. Lane is an investment coach. He's a best-selling author. He has a ton of experience in this field. He and Pat are talking about how to take your investments to the next level, generate passive income, and be your own boss. Hope you guys enjoy the conversation. Have a great week.
The main reason we started Connect is to give everyone the opportunity to do what I did.
We wanted to be able to offer the real estate community, especially locally, something new, something that was fresh.
And if we can help a couple people change their lives through this education.
Just one person or two people coming up to me saying, man, that was awesome. Like what you put on was great.
Then it'd be a huge win for everyone. If you've gotten any value at all from this Yellowbird podcast, make sure to like, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes.
All right. How's it going, everybody? This is Pat Flynn. This is the Yellowbird Connect podcast, and we're really excited to have Lane. Lane, we did a little bit of pronunciation work on your last name when we first started. What is it? How do you pronounce it, Lane?
Kawaoka.
Lane Kawaoka from you're in Hawaii right now.
That's correct.
So coming to us all the way from Hawaii. We're in Jacksonville, Florida. We're going to be talking about more passive side of investing today. That's why we're really excited to have Lane with us. He has passive investments all over the country. We're going to talk a little bit about how he got started and how he grew it to the empire he's got now. So can you, just to get started, Lane, give us a little bit about your background and up to whenever you bought your first property?
Yeah, so I graduated college 2007. Up to that time, I was just completely blue pill finance. So go to school, get a good job. I was an engineer, and I just went to work, saved my money for a couple years, followed the dogma to buy your own place to live at. And then because I was working as a construction supervisor, I was traveling all the time for work, never home. So I just decided, hey, I'm just call up my old property manager and say, can you rent this thing out? And I'll go on company expenses and live in the hotel and just save my money even more. So the first property I bought was $350,000. It rented for $2,200 and the mortgage was $1,600. So that was a lot of beer money to a 20-something-year-old kid. But I didn't know anything about, that was Seattle, Washington. It was an A-class rental, completely what you shouldn't do for passive income. You should be looking more for secondary and tertiary markets where you got that magical 1%.
Really funny that you did that, because I did literally the exact same thing. I have an engineering background too, went to school, always thought get a good job. That's how that's what success is. Go get a good job. So I had a little money saved. And I bought a house in Jacksonville Beach, which is an A-class area right at the beach. The house was $240,000. I had to put another 50 grand into it. So our numbers are very similar in that my mortgage was about $1,600 a month, and I rented it for $21,000. So, but I had $70,000 held up in this property, and the reason I think that happened to me and I made that mistake off the bat was because I didn't really network with anyone else. I read some books and thought I knew it all and had a little money saved and just jumped into it that way. But that's funny. We have such a similar story.
We probably thought we were going to have these crazy parties in it, right? Because millennials with houses and...
Well, with mine, I bought it, and then me and my girlfriend at the time were the people that were doing the renovation, and we almost killed each other several times. And it was 6 weeks of hell painting and watching YouTube to try to learn how to do little parts of construction. And I was like, there's got to be a better way to build a rental portfolio than this. And then in the end, we're making like $300 a month off it, after expenses. So,
yeah, I was in a complete silo too. I didn't know anything about buying in, A class, B class, C class rentals. At that time, after I realized I was making like a few hundred bucks, or actually probably $500 or $600 a month. I realized like, this is my ticket out of the rat race to get out of this stupid job I didn't like, or to like babysit older men.
So what, Where did you get even that mindset to do that? Because you said you started off engineering, go get a good job. Where did you even get the mindset to even buy that in the first place? And what made you take action to do it?
I mean, I grew up in a family where, you know, nobody was landlords or investors. I mean, I vividly remember when I was like four, I asked my mom, like, oh, did we, you know, do we own this house? Does everybody own their house? And she was like, oh, some people rent, you know, and pay the owner money. And I'm like, oh, cool, why don't we do that? And she told me, no, you don't want to do that because people will mess up your house. And then that was the end of that. But fast forward like 20, you know, almost 20 years. And, you know, when you're young and, I mean, you know, engineers are, you're always thinking, you're always scheming, right? I mean, I always did like a lot of stupid stuff to save money. So this was not any stretch by any means. So it's just, I stumbled upon this whole landlord thing, I guess. And, you know, at that point, I must have been like 22 or something like that, 22, 23. At that point, I started to devour all the podcasts, learn about rent-to-value ratios, and I started to make a little bit more of a strategy. I was going to buy a duplex in Seattle, but in a little bit more rougher area, more A-minus class building. So I bought it for $250, and I rented for $2,000 a month. But then I was going to buy another in 2012, but at that point, the prices were up, and I wasn't cash flowing anymore. And then I realized, oh, you don't buy properties in California, Seattle, East Coast, right? Like, you just don't do that unless you're the other 90% of unsophisticated investors that buy places for appreciation because they're gamblers. So I tried one of these turnkey rentals in Birmingham, and lo and behold, it worked. So what does a...
Turnkey rental? Did you buy it turnkey or did you buy it distressed and...
I bought it turnkey. You know, because I was like a, you know, I made like 80 grand at my job. I didn't have too much time. Maybe my thought was like go turnkey and then open it up, you know, for doing burrs or whatever after, right? But at least build the team that's going to operate it in the future.
Okay.
And then, so I bought one, and then what does any, engineer thinking guy do but sell off all the single family homes in Seattle and do a 1031 exchange and buy nine right after that? And that was when I got into double digits of properties in Birmingham, Atlanta, Indianapolis in 2014.
So were you using like a turnkey company to do this, or were you finding them on your own? What were you doing exactly?
I think I bought a couple of them in that method, but then, you know, you overpay by doing that.
Definitely.
And they don't really add too much value. And more times than not, they're in cahoots with the person you're working with anyway. So once you are a little bit more experienced and you know the areas and you have the property management team on your side, it's better just to go to the broker at that point or get your own agent.
Okay. So just to start, just to go kind of through how you got started really quick, because a lot of people that listen to this are wondering how they get started. They're making a little money, but they think buying your first house requires a ton of cash. Can you take us through that house in that Class A neighborhood you bought, how you financed it, and kind of how you found it and how that all happened?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, I just found a broker and I told him what I wanted, and I just happened to buy in the right time where things were cheap in Seattle. So no secrets there, and you're not going to like this, but it's boring. I just use conventional financing, 20% down.
Exactly what I did.
I mean, I the people I work with, we're not broke, right? We got money. We make more money at our jobs and we know what to really do with it. Well, not going to say that, I guess, but like we make decent money. Our time is more valuable to go spend like kissing butt to get that higher level promotion than to go find some kind of like loophole in the mortgage and do a wraparound and do all these complicated things.
Right.
And that's why you know, stuff I do is very simple, simple passive cash flow for a reason.
That's why I like it. That's why I like it. And that's why I like walk. It may seem simple to you and me at this point, but someone just starting off to the fact that you just said you went out, found a house, did a conventional mortgage, put 20% down. I mean, that's great info for how to get started. That's a great way for anybody to get started in this, I think. So just hearing that from someone that's so successful now to what they did to start, I think that puts everything in perspective. And I do think that's very, really valuable going through that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the key is just finding people that are similar in your situation in terms of net worth, how much money you make at your job, and then, you know, how much time you have on your hands.
Right.
And then, you know, follow that path. Because there's only a few paths. I mean, my path is a high paid professional W-2 worker. And for those people, you start off with a few turnkey rentals, build your portfolio to half a dozen or even less, and then go to private placements and syndications, and then get to accredited status. And then now you're taking off to the stratosphere after that. So
you just laid out a great plan. When you first made the decision to do this and buy your first rental, obviously you weren't completely satisfied with your job if you went out and tried to do something like this. What was your goal initially? And what, you know, did you have that, what you just said, that path, was that your goal initially the whole time? What was your goal initially and how did it change throughout the process?
First few years, I just wanted to make some beer money so I could go to Las Vegas and spend money that it was kind of like on the house, right? I mean, nothing's better than have free money, right? but then I realized, like, hey, I could do some damage with this thing. If I just bought like 5 of these houses, I could quit my job, or 10 of these things.
Crazy realization.
Right, right. But all the way through 2016, I thought that I was going to, you know, get 20 or 30 or 40 of these single family homes. And then that was going to be my retirement. But the pivot happened when I had 11 of these properties. And I was
so after you bought the Birmingham and Atlanta, after you sold the ones in Seattle, so
right,
and took your equity in that, 1031 them over to these turnkeys in Atlanta and Birmingham. So now you have 10. That's where the pivot came, 10 or 11.
Yeah, I had 11. So with that sample size, I was cash flowing, you know, $3,000 a month, which not bad, right? But no one's going to quit their job over $3,000. You're going to need 10 grand at least to do that. So with the 10 houses, I was getting maybe an eviction or two a month or a year.
But were these all completely hands-off on your part? These were all managed turnkey rentals you bought, and you didn't have to renovate them, do anything. You just bought them. They had a renter in them, and you're completely passive?
Well, you got a property manager, but then, you know, you're playing managing the manager, right? And you're still going through an eviction or two a year. You're having a big catastrophe happen every quarter, like an HVAC goes out or a plumbing thing, you know, somebody does this, which is fine, right? I mean, you're just, you know, it's just a bunch of emails and phone calls here and there, but that's only on 10 houses. Like, yep. I said, you need 10 grand to be able to retire and hit a certain scale.
So that was your goal. 10 grand, yeah. A month, your initial goal, 10 grand a month passive income, and then right, you're going to leave your job.
Right. So you're going to need 30 of these houses, so 3x that. So now you're talking about eviction every couple months.
Engineer, very analytical. You knew exactly how many you needed, exactly, you know, how quick you're able to do it.
Right. And then a big catastrophe every few weeks, right? I mean, it's just, yeah. And not to mention, like, you know, once the equity, you get a better, you know, investments go well and you get a better equity position by the mortgage pay down and the appreciation in the house. Now you've got to, you know, you got to work the equity because right, smart investors, they never hold on to the property forever. They either cash out, refinance, or 1031 into the next asset to re-leverage their equity. Okay. So that's just a nightmare with 30 houses. You know, you're going to be paying so much to these loan officers and
yeah,
and these other agents. And you can't even get more than 10 properties. You can get 10 in your name, 10 in your spouse's name. But after right, 20, you're getting these crap loans, portfolio right, loans.
So you had 11. What happened? What happened with your pivot? And what did you do next? Did you get up to 30 next, or what happened at 11? You said you made a pivot.
So at 11, I finally opened up my wallet and started to pay for like mastermind groups and mentorships. So I paid like $30,000 to learn about being an apartment operator, because I was like, huh, I'm in my late 30s. I'm probably going to be doing this for quite some time. So I might as well learn it the right way instead of just using the old podcast, which only gets you so far.
Right.
So I did that. I analyzed, like, I learned how to analyze properties. I analyzed 150 properties over the next 18 months, realized everything.
Multifamily?
Right. I realized what I should not buy. And I guess the money was worth it for that. But then I realized, like, if you live in like LA or like California, Seattle, you're not near where the deals are. Like, you know, you're in Jacksonville, so you're actually in a pretty good place. But if you're not near there, you have no ability to build rapport and connection with the brokers who control all the deals.
So that's an important piece that I don't know a whole lot about too. You just said that in bigger apartment building deals, so not really single family, apartment, multifamily, the brokers have a lot of control in that side of the business over those deals?
Right. I mean, single family home world, like 80% of the deals that you want to do are off market, right?
Right, exactly.
20% might come from the MLS, but it's flip-flop in commercial residential.
Interesting.
Where 80% of the deals are controlled by the big brokerage houses like Marcus Millichap, SBN, all these other guys you hear about. And you have to be a proven buyer. You have to own like 1,000 units. You know, and you got to be buddy buddy with the guy,
right?
You
have to be the first person he texts when something comes up.
Yeah, yeah, and I know what you're probably thinking, Pat. Oh, I'm gonna be the get the 20% of the other deals, right? I'm gonna be that guy. But those 20% of the other deals don't really fit my criteria, because my criteria is like I go after cash flowing properties that cash flowing today, 90% occupied or more.
You don't buy to renovate and add value. You buy cash flowing.
Well, what we do, we buy properties that have cash, that have value add, no doubt, that we can bump the rents $50, $100 by putting in maybe $3,000 to $6,000 per unit. But the thing's got to cash flow day one.
Mm-hmm.
And for it to cash flow and get the non-recourse magical financing from Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, that property needs to be 90% occupied or more. So those 20% of off-market deals out there, they're usually a bunch of garbage properties that are like 30 to 60% occupied that won't qualify for that off the bat.
Okay.
So, you know, unless you want to be taking huge risks like that, you need to go through a broker.
Okay. So you mentioned a couple problems that you had to deal with. You're in Hawaii now and you're still buying these. So how did you find the broker that sold it to you? How did you do that networking? How do you continue to do it?
So I gave up. if you can't beat them, join them. So, well, one good thing is I learned how to analyze the deals. And when I get a pitch deck, I just throw that thing away. I ask for the P&Ls and I rent for the rent rolls and I analyze the thing myself. And I run my own comps.
Yeah.
So you start to learn who are different syndication groups and operators out there, and you just, you know, you invest in their deals. And that's what I did.
Okay.
Partially just to get on my resume. So, you know, me and my partner, we had about 30, 40 units combined, but nobody cares in multifamily residential commercial world, right?
Right.
Nobody could care less, right? So we were like, all right, let's just go as a limited partner and LP into a big syndication so we can at least pump our resume up. So we went into a couple of deals and magically we were five owners of 500 units.
Right. That's interesting you say that. I didn't know people did that, but that's a great idea. Yeah. As a resume pumper. Yeah.
Right. So we ran like that for like 6 months and then we realized like, dang, this LP role is pretty good, right? Like who doesn't want like 15 to 20% returns?
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
It's good.
With all tax-free, because you do all this like bonus depreciation magic.
Yeah.
It just blows like single family homes out of the water.
So this, but your LPs, so the value you bring is your cash though. It's not right. The sweat equity in finding the deal. So you had you had the cash through your rental property and your regular job to invest in these syndication deals?
Right, right. Like if your net worth is under like $500,000, you have no business being an LP.
Right.
I mean, LP is sweet, right? So is drinking caviar and wine every evening. But unless you got the cash to do it, you can't do it.
Right.
So at that point, and then, you know, like when you're going in on these deals, you got to put hard money down, like 50, even 200 grand on some of these buildings, and you could possibly lose it. And right. I was like, no way, this sucks. Like, and being an operator, when you're a newer syndicator, you barely get paid anything. It's like a job.
Yeah, it's a small, you take, because you don't have the cash, right? So your job is to network with high net worth individuals and put the deal together. That's,
yeah, I mean, and plus, you know, most people know you're new and you suck.
So
your sponsor comps are a lot less. So you're kind of working for free.
Yeah.
So I was like, screw that. Let's just be an LP. And now I'm kind of focusing more to just like filtering the best deals and being the best passive investor I can be. And, you know, luckily I know how to underwrite the deal myself, so I can fact check everything. But now I invest in all kinds of stuff.
So your path, and correct me if I'm wrong with your path, do you still work at your engineering job?
I quit like 4 months ago.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
But your path was, you're making good money, good W-2 income, buy a couple rentals, buy, you know, sell those, 1031 into more rentals. So now you have rental property and your W-2 income, invested in your first syndication deal. So now all that passive income coming in, you're just reinvesting it into more syndication deals as an LP.
Yeah, that's the idea. So you're trying to create like a, you know how your grandpa had like a CD ladder where they all kind of cash out or expire at the same time. Essentially, I'm kind of doing that with syndications. I mean, a lot of them, like they have a time frame of 3 years to 7 years. So you're just kind of layering them on top of each other. You know, maybe just sort of dollar cost averaging, maybe going into a deal as they come up every few months or every half a year, depending how much cash you have. But
do you typically invest with the same syndication team every time? I mean, if it works the first time, why not stick with the same people?
Well, the problem with that is, like, you know, like syndicators, when they're first starting out, their sponsor comps are less, right? I mean, yeah, sometimes when people get good, their investor list grows and the splits get worse and worse.
Yeah, they don't need you as much anymore.
Yeah, they call it sponsor creep, or I call it. So, yeah, you got some of that going on. And that's the way I diversify, right? With passive investing or being an LP, you diversify four ways with different deals, obviously, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to go into any deal with more than 5% of your net worth. Since most investors are accredited or $1 million net worth or more, the normal increments you invest are like $50,000 per deal.
Yeah, okay.
So you get diversification that way, diversification through different partners, because maybe I just don't trust people, but, you know, I expect if someone goes on tough times that they're going to choose their family over the deal. And maybe I just have a very negative outlook on life that way. that's why I don't want to go with the same people every single time.
Okay.
And then, you know, different geographic locations and also different asset classes, you know, multifamily, assisted living, mobile home park, self-storage.
Fair enough.
You can run the table with the things.
So your day-to-day now, looking for these deals, is your day-to-day looking for new syndicators, or is it looking at deals?
I mean, it's kind of both. I just sit on my computer and people email me stuff, and every other couple months when things look really good, I'll go fly there because I don't have a job and I'm gonna get off the island.
So have you cashed out of any of these, or are you just keeping the passive income rolling? You did your first.
Yeah. I mean, that's why, like, the criteria is cash flow, right? Like, you try to, you're perfectly fine with just the cash flow alone. There's a kicker at the end when the asset is repositioned and then, you know, that it's sold at a, you know, for whatever the prevailing cap rate is.
Yeah.
But I mean, I believe the recession is coming up in the next year to three. So that kicker may not come right away, but at least I cash flow. And that's why you pick up properties that cash flow right away. And that's why I stay away from development deals. I don't try not to invest in things that aren't cash flowing day one.
I mean, that's a good way to do it. I love all different perspectives on this. Again, that's definitely a strong one. If it's not cash flowing day one, you can find something that is. You mentioned if you live in Los Angeles, Seattle, doesn't make a whole lot of sense to buy apartment buildings out there because they're not cash flowing. You have to go in areas where they are. And that's something I didn't understand really when I first started. I bought a house in a Class A neighborhood, and yes, it cash flowed a little bit. I made, you know, 10% off the money I invested, but I could have gone a different spot in Jacksonville, Class B or C neighborhood, and made 25, 30% off the money I had invested. And that goes down to, you know, just not networking like I should.
Right. Right. I mean, I think, you know, we're talking about your guys listening, you know, a lot of them are more active, right? And I think that's awesome. I think that's akin to like a lot of my investors. They make 300 grand a year at their day job, being a doctor or whatever. That's their, everybody's going to have a JOB, a way to generate capital.
Yeah.
Right. You're thinking in terms of hands, like this hand just makes money, right? But you need to have that big picture where the other hand invests that money, the excess, in the right thing. Right. The stuff that I do is investing it passively. Whatever you do to generate income, that's, you got to keep doing that and keep that heavy. I mean, a lot of my guys are like computer programmers, so a lot of them will be doing startups, but they're smart enough to know that that stuff is very volatile and they need to transfer the money from one hand to the other and then go passive with the excess. I think that's the flippers trap, right? Is like you just keep doing more deals and more deals and you're getting killed on taxes, right, in the meantime.
Yep. Yeah, you're exactly right. And that's a good thing to keep in mind, people that are first getting started, whether you're, you know, that's the standard path of an investor, right? Is you start off wholesaling when you don't have any money, then you're flipping some houses. That can get addicting because it's quick money, but you need to take that money, just like you said, Lane, and invest in rentals, invest in apartment buildings, invest in smart decisions, and continue to, you know, actively make the money on the other side, however you do it, whether it's through flipping or your day job. It doesn't matter as long as you have that. And that's exactly what we're doing now. We're doing the flipping, the wholesaling, and everything in excess gets invested in a single family home rental portfolio. That's our model.
I mean, the tricky thing is, like, you know, you get some excess, you go buy more yellow letters. I mean, I don't know, your guy, that's more your guys' world, but you know, do you go buy more marketing or what? You got to put it, you got to reinvest in the business because that's your generation of capital. But you know, when do you move it to the other hand is a big tricky.
It is
quantum, different situation for everybody, for sure.
I have another question. I don't know how, what, I'm curious your perspective on this. Obviously right now, you scroll through Facebook and there's coaching programs everywhere, guru programs everywhere. The big one I see a lot is learn how to be a syndicator. There are learn how to be a syndicator classes everywhere. And right now, what do you think of the big push to teach people how to syndicate? And what are they teaching in those courses? Is it to send nice yellow letters to apartment building owners and try to get off market the 20% you're talking about? And is there still, do you think there's still room for more people to do that? Or are things getting eaten up by the brokerages? Anything that's worth a shit?
Well, I think traditionally, like these guru groups, they were designed to create bird dog armies. So like I said, to do apartments, you need money, bro. So what they do is they create these educational programs where these people will sign up. They usually are, you know, younger folks that like to watch Grant Cardone and wear his 10 rubber wristbands. You know, those type of guys.
Yeah.
That will like run into brick walls and call people insensitively to sell their apartment, right?
Yep.
Any of those guys will get absolutely nothing because it's like running into a brick wall, right? But once in a while,
yeah,
some guy will get through that wall.
Mm-hmm.
And he will bring you a deal and you will pay him almost nothing for that. Because what good is the deal if you can't close it?
Right.
You know? So that's how they're sort of designed. I mean, that's why I always tell people, start off with the small stuff. Build up your network so you can actually do a deal yourself.
I do have a question about that, though. Because at the same time, it's similar in if you're wholesale. We're not wholesalers, but it's similar if you're wholesaling to the point where the people that don't have any money are going out and finding the deals, right? They don't have the ability to close them, but it's so competitive right now that if they contract a house for 50 grand and the investor number is 100 and I offer them 80, you know, or I try to pay them nothing, I offer them, you know, 55 for it, there's 10 other people behind me that are willing to pay 100 for it. So they're not going to sell it to me. Is it the same in the, obviously there's a lot more to buying an apartment building than there is a house. There's a syndication. There's a lot more cash that needs to be put out. But can someone that goes and contracts an apartment building at a price go out and shop it to different syndicators to see how they can get paid the most? Or is it way too complicated of a process for them to be able to do something like that?
It's way too complicated where, I mean, I don't want to be mean or anything, but I don't think your average wholesaler will be able to do the math to figure out what that property is worth or what
if they have an inspection period and they just, all they do is send out shit all the time, what's the disadvantage to them?
Well, and then it's also, there's not as many buyers. There's like 1% as many buyers too. But again, it's like the stuff that the wholesalers are finding, they are they're not stuff I would buy. You know, again, my criteria and a lot of other investors' criteria who are higher net worth, who are more interested in capital preservation and not swinging for the fences every single time and losing everything, are looking for 90% occupied or more buildings.
Mm-hmm.
A wholesaler is not going to find that.
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying they can. I mean, yeah, shoot me an email and let me know when you find it. Like, I mean, it ain't going to happen. It's a waste of time.
Diamond in the rough.
Right. You know, running through brick walls. 10 exit. Yeah.
One more question for you, Lane. What is... we walked through your path pretty extensively, I think. What is the ultimate goal? Is there an ultimate goal, or do you just continue to do your thing every day and expand your portfolio? Do you have a income goal, or what is the goal in all of it? Do you think you need a goal, or do you just need to keep working every day and grow?
I think it's a constant journey and it always changes and you got to celebrate the wins along the way. But I mean, my goal right now is maybe like 15 or 20,000 passive a month. I mean, I don't see myself being able to spend any more than that. That's the nice thing about living in Hawaii. People are all poor here anyway. So difference does it make?
Right.
In terms of, I mean, my day is kind of structured. Like I get up in the morning and I, you know, look at deals, but essentially I'm kind of like a writer where I just write on my podcasts or my blog and try and basically build an archive of like money. You know, I'm trying to build like a part of my website where like people who are broke, how do you get unbroke? You know, kind of getting back to how I got into this stuff in the first place. Like a whole
that stuff's valuable. Plan. Stuff's really valuable. Yeah.
Because people don't teach this stuff in college or high school or, you know.
So if someone wants to find you and read more about your story and read your blog post, where we'll put it in the show notes, but where can they go and find all that?
They can go to simplepassivecashflow.com. That newbie one is NOOB for like non-real estate investing side, or /NOOB for noob. But if you're an investor, I would go to simplepassivecashflow.com/start. That's a good, you know, place to get started. And then if you don't read too well like me and you get tired, there's the podcast, Stay Simple, Passive Cash Flow. I'd say the first 20 podcasts are about me doing turnkey rentals, and then, you know, the next 50 podcasts are like the twist, the dramatic twist.
Awesome. That's all. I mean, documenting your journey through that path, I mean, really valuable, because someone can look at it and they have the framework, and it gives them the, it shows them that it's possible. And that's the most important thing. I just remember when I was first getting started, it seemed insurmountable for me to be able to invest in an apartment building or even flip a house. So you really are helping people when you put that stuff out there. But thank you so much, Lane, for your time. I think we had a lot of good information today. I love starting from the beginning and really taking it step by step. And I think you did a great job breaking down your story for everybody.
Yeah, no problem. Anything we can do to prevent people from running into brick walls.
All right, man. Thanks again. We'll be right back.